Home mortgage rates haven't gone through the roof in recent weeks. That's the good news. Hi, I'm Rob West. The bad news is they're already pretty high. Coupled with high home values, it's an uphill climb for first-time home buyers. Will it get easier anytime soon? Dale Vermillion joins us today to talk about it. And then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, our friend Dale Vermillion is always a calm voice when you're stressing out about buying or selling a home. Dale is the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home, a book rooted in biblical principles, we should add. Dale, great to have you back, my friend.
Rob, always great to be here. Thank you so much.
So, Dale, rates on a 30-year fixed mortgage have been hovering around 7%. We can probably expect them to stay there for at least a while. Is that right?
We can. Every analyst I've talked to thinks they're going to stay between 6.5 and 7.25 for the remainder of this year. Not much less than that. So that's the outlook for 2024.
All right. When do you think we see a 5 handle or below? I mean, you think we're a couple of years at a minimum?
I think we are. I think that unless something dramatic happens in the marketplace, we don't anticipate rates to get down in the fives probably until 2026 early. Late 2025 is the predictions that I'm seeing from every analyst I'm talking to.
All right. Dale, describe what it's like out there right now trying to buy a first home.
Well, the biggest challenge, of course, is affordability. People think it's inventory, but actually inventory is up. We're at 620,000 homes nationwide. Last year, this time was 451,000. We're seeing new listings grow. They grew 8% from April to May. They're up 12.6% year over year. Last year, we were down 23%. So inventory is not the problem. Affordability is the issue. The average sales price is around $420,000. So you got to be thinking about, you know, what can you afford and how can you make sure you budget properly to get into a home that makes sense?
Yeah, that's the key, is making sure you count the cost, because the last thing you want to do is get overextended, placing unnecessary pressure on your financial situation. But given what you said about the fact that we don't see interest rates coming down materially anytime soon and inventory is improving, it doesn't mean you shouldn't be buying. In fact, this is probably a better time than we've had in the last couple of years, as long as you're ready financially. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. And the other thing we've got going is new construction starts have been up for the last couple of years. And there's a lot of builders starting to build in that lower $200,000 to $350,000 more first-time buyer range. So keep your eyes peeled for that, because there's going to be more of that happening nationwide.
Yeah. Now we're through the busiest season, because a lot of folks want to get into a home before school starts, and we're actually entering a season where it's a little better time to buy, right?
It really is. Although what's interesting about what's happened in the marketplace since COVID is that we're really not seeing seasonality anything like we used to anymore. It used to be that the spring, summer was the hot season, fall, winter was a little bit cooler. I think that's still probably a little better time to buy, because there's less buyers in the market. But because there's so much population numbers and so much demand, pretty much when the market rates go down, the buyers come out of the woodwork. So, anytime you see rates up, that's your best time to buy right now, because believe it or not, that's when you're going to have less competition. You can get into a home, and we know rates are going to go down eventually. You can drop them down. As you see rates drop, we're going to see a flurry like we saw in 2020 and 2021 again.
Yeah, very good. What about pricing your home for sale, Dale? It seems like we've flipped. It used to be when I was growing up and my parents were buying and selling houses, you'd price it high and negotiate down. Now it seems like you price it lower, get as many buyers to the table, recognizing that people are willing to pay over asking. Is that a general rule of thumb?
Well, that's changing. What we're seeing now is, you know, in a typical year, we see about 33% of homes that go up for sale cut price before they close on the sale. So they're below the actual asking price. This year, we're seeing 35 to 36% in the last couple of months. So we're starting to see listing prices drop. And from a seller standpoint, that means that you got to be thinking you're probably going to get right around what your sales price is that you're asking for, unless you're in one of those really hot markets where just demand is crazy and there's still some of those left.
Well, we always appreciate you stopping by. Dale is the author of Navigating the Mortgage Maze. Dale, always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Rob. Thank you so much. God bless.
Back with your questions after this. 800-525-7000. Stick around.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. One of the most famous parts of the Old Testament is the giving of the Ten Commandments. Up on a mountaintop, many days on end, Moses was meeting with God. In fact, he was gone so long, the Israelites down below thought he was dead. Where would they go without the one who had led them out of Egypt? Well, interestingly enough, the words of those commandments, the very first words, it's a correction. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And not only that, these are words of grace. God's reminding them of what he has already done for them before asking them to do anything for him. You see, they too were saved by grace through faith. Grow in your walk with Christ. Visit getanchor.com.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
The world around us is constantly challenging the way we think. That's why we need a constant source of information that's based on the unchanging Word of God. I'm Jeff Shambley, and I invite you to join me for The Stand Radio, a weekly program that highlights the latest trends in culture, faith, and family. You'll hear insightful interviews with a biblical worldview application. The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Always great to have our buddy Dale Vermillion stop by. He's the author of Navigating the Mortgage Maze. It's a great tool if you're looking at an upcoming home purchase. You're going to need to secure a mortgage. You're just wanting to make sure you're prepared for that. Dale offers a biblical perspective that's chock full of practical advice. And by the way, in the news today, the average 30-year fixed mortgage rate fell to 6.73%. That's down from 6.78% a week ago. We'll take it. That's the lowest level since February. And I realize you might be saying, well, that's not much. Well, the trend is in the right direction, and that's certainly helpful for folks. Now, most economists expect, though, the average rate to stay above 6% this year, as we talked about with Dale a moment ago, even with the expectations of a possible Federal Reserve rate cut coming this September. The Fed has held fast on current rates in its meeting as late as this week, but we are expecting cuts before year end. We will see those mortgage rates come down slowly. What does that mean? Well, that just means home affordability will continue to be challenging. High prices coupled with high interest rates just make it really difficult. Now, it obviously helps if you have a property to sell because you're getting top dollar going out. But if you're replacing a mortgage with a two handle with something that has a six handle, that's a pretty steep jump and obviously affects the overall mortgage payment, which is why the average payment now is north of $2,100. Hard to imagine, and yet it's the new reality. So just be careful as you're going in to make that home purchase. Make sure you got that down payment. 20% might mean you have to delay. Good news is if you are delaying that home purchase, hopefully when you're ready and you've saved up the right amount, we'll see rates lower than they are now in the fives, maybe even back in the fours. Secondly, make sure you check that mortgage payment. Really run those calculators. The big idea here is don't get stuck shopping for the house you want without focusing on the budget you can afford. So we figure out how much can we afford, and a good rule of thumb there is 25% of your take-home pay, no more than that. If you have to go to 30%, you're in a tough part of the country where affordability is even lower, well, maybe you have to stretch a little bit. I wouldn't go beyond 30%. It's just going to make it really difficult to balance everything else. And if you focus on, I've got to have that 20% down, I'm no more than 25 at the max 30% of my take-home pay, and then you shop accordingly, well, that's going to ensure that you don't get stretched. Because if you start shopping based on features or location and you don't consider the budget, I guarantee you're going to find something you fall in love with. You're going to talk yourself into, well, I can make this cut and I'll make more money and I'll work more hours. And then when it doesn't come to pass, you're stuck and saddled with one of the biggest budget busters out there. Among transportation, food, and housing, those are kind of the three budget busters that we see so often. And you can sell a car a little easier. You can sell a house. You can certainly dial back your food budget easier than you can sell a house. That house is very costly to unwind, to sell, and to relocate. So don't get stuck with a home you can't afford. That will plague you with an inability to have a surplus for a long, long time. So hopefully that's helpful to you. Good news is we're seeing some positive trends with inventories building. We're seeing interest rates coming down. That's all good news for home affordability. Hopefully that continues. All right, we're going to turn the corner here in just a moment. We're ready to take your calls and questions. So whatever's on your mind today in your financial life, we'd love to tackle it with you. We'd love to hear about what you're considering in your financial life. What are you wrestling with? How can we help you process those very practical decisions and choices you're making every day in light of God's wisdom? That's our goal here on this program, to be hopeful, to be reverent as we approach God's word, to give you wise counsel, but also to be kind-hearted in our approach, to walk alongside you, realizing, listen, we all make mistakes. We all wish we would have done certain things differently with regard to our financial life. So we leave those at the foot of the cross. We commit to being that wise and faithful steward moving forward, and we make the best decisions we can. But it starts with the idea of lordship. You know, we have to begin there. If we don't get that big rock in place, which is the primary differentiator between God's economy and man's economy, it's the fact that we surrender to the idea that God owns everything. That's lordship. Psalm 24:1 is clear. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. So we have to start there. There are more big rocks, but that's the first one, lordship. When we start there, it changes our perspective. It changes everything about how we handle money because we realize it's God's money, and therefore we want, as the steward, to align our hearts with the master's because we're managing his money. Hey, let's take some phone calls today. We'll continue to unpack a few of those money traps, if you will, that we can get stuck in man's economy throughout the broadcast, but we also want to hear what's on your mind today. 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's go to New York to begin today. Deanna, go right ahead. How can I help?
Yes, I got a letter in the mail from Liberty Counsel saying that there were three bills in the House and Senate standing in the way of their, I guess that's the government's desire for a central bank digital currency in America. And it said we must be sure to make these bills, we must make sure these bills pass, or he, I think meaning Biden, will take Orwellian control of your finances and put into effect what is essentially a line item veto to the government will wield over your money. And it says,
well, I appreciate you raising this issue, Deanna. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You can finish your thought there.
It says, protect your financial privacy.
Yeah.
Tell Congress to vote yes on H.R. 1122, H.R. 3712, and S.887.
Okay, very good. Listen, I appreciate you raising that. A couple of thoughts there. Number one, American Family Association is your source for legislative action and where we need to be leaning in. Number two, I would agree with you in that I think the thought of a central bank digital currency, CBDC, is very concerning. I don't think we're going to see it anytime soon. It does take an act of Congress. Congress would have to pass anything related to a digital currency. That's not going to happen, certainly, in an election year. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. It's a hotly debated and a divided topic. The reason is, and I think for good reason, there's a lot of congressional leaders that are very concerned about the loss of privacy, just what you said, that would come with a central bank digital currency, especially one that would replace the current physical currency, the physical dollar, because that means there's just a loss of privacy. There's a, they would be able to see into all of our financial transactions. It's not inconceivable that there could even be social controls implemented along with your spending. So an example would be, you've reached your fossil fuel limit for the month. You're done. I mean, that would be a huge invasion of our privacy. Here's the good news. The House has passed a bill barring the Fed from issuing a digital dollar and hasn't passed the Senate. That was back in May. The president can't act alone. There's a lot of leaders that are concerned about this. Some states are getting ahead of it. Even the state of Florida has said a CBDC is not compliant with their uniform commercial code. So I don't think this is happening anytime soon, but it's one we need to continue to watch for sure. We'll be right back.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training or cultural transformation. AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Paying too much for health insurance? Frustrated by high deductibles and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high costs of healthcare. Take control over your healthcare costs with a program from CHM that could save you up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
I'd like to take a moment to ask you to consider investing in the ministry that you know as American Family Association. One way you can support AFA's efforts is through your estate planning. You can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit afafoundation.net.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. We've got one line open, 800-525-7000. We're taking your calls on anything financial. Before the break, we were talking about a central bank digital currency. Again, not likely. Would require Congress, the Treasury, the President cannot act alone on this. And what's interesting is, and you probably saw this in the news, in a recent speech at a crypto conference, the Bitcoin conference, former President Trump said, and I quote, "There will never be a CBDC while I'm president of the United States." And he will always defend the right to self-custody. So we at least know where he's headed and thinks about that issue should he be reelected come this November. A topic we'll certainly need to continue to follow for all the reasons we talked about. Let's head back to the phones, 800-525-7000. We're going to go to Arkansas next. Hi, Scott. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Ron. Had a question about consolidation, or whether it's best to consolidate different traditional IRA and traditional IRA and 401k accounts. I've worked for different companies over the years, and I have actually two different 401k investments and a third that's my own private Roth IRA and traditional IRA account in different companies. Is it best to consolidate these all into a single traditional IRA and or Roth IRA?
Yeah, I like that option, Scott, just because it reduces the complexity and the oversight that you have to bring. I mean, when you have multiple accounts, you've got to keep track of multiple accounts, which means you've got to make sure that you have a consistent investment strategy. And anytime you make changes to the investment strategy, you have to do it in multiple places. So anytime we can consolidate that, not to mention the fact that if you've got some accounts that, you know, are very small, it just limits the investment options you have available to you versus, you know, consolidating it at one place, which means you have more in the way of total investable assets, which does open up additional options. Certain mutual funds, for example, will have minimums. So I like that idea that you would consolidate. I'm not concerned about having everything at one firm. I'm not even concerned about having everything under the guidance and oversight of one advisor, should you be delegating that away from yourself. So, I think that does make some sense, and it's fairly simple. You know, as you collect all of those accounts, get the paperwork, you can just do rollovers right into that new IRA. And then the key is just to, you know, give regular oversight to the investment mix that you have to make sure that it's appropriate for your age and goals and objectives. But any questions on that?
Well, I guess the only complexity in some of that is that some my contributions were all Roth IRA, but the company contributions were traditional IRA. So does that and I have both Roth and traditional IRA accounts of my own.
Sure.
So just consolidate into those accounts, and then hopefully I want to like pay taxes and convert some of the traditional IRAs to Roth IRAs. Does that sound like a good way to do it?
It does. Yeah. So when I was saying consolidate, I was saying consolidate the traditionals to the traditional IRA and the Roths to the Roth IRA, not necessarily combining them through a Roth conversion. So if you have Roth 401ks hanging out there, those would roll into the existing Roth IRA, or let's say you have multiple Roth IRAs, you could, you know, combine them. And then the same would be true with the traditional 401ks into the traditional IRA. So I think that one's a no-brainer just to get everything in essentially what would become two accounts, one Roth and one traditional. Now, the idea that you would convert a portion of the traditional over to a Roth, you know, you could certainly look at that. I mean, the good news is tax rates are low. We don't know, obviously, the outcome of the election. We will come, you know, this November. If nothing changes, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from Trump expires, and we know tax rates are headed higher. So there is, you know, the opportunity for you to go ahead and convert now. I think the key would be, is there enough reason to do that in the sense that, yes, the tax rates are one factor, but the other factor is, you know, the Roth really shines when you have time on your side and you can get the benefit of that tax-free growth. And then, of course, on top of that, you have no required minimum distribution. But I think just kind of working with your CPA and making some of those decisions on, does it make sense to convert? And if so, what portion of your traditional? You certainly wouldn't want to do too much where it's pushing it up into a higher tax bracket in any one year. But it is something to consider, I think, in concert with your other professionals.
Great. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Yes, sir. God bless you. Thanks for being on the program today. Let's head to Texas. Hi, Gus. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Rob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious, you were talking a couple of days ago with a gentleman with refinancing, and I caught most of it, but I don't remember him saying if you take the credit card or the credit line, what the interest rate was on paying that credit line back.
Yeah, are you talking about a reverse mortgage, Gus?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So the interest rate is variable. And so it's just going to move with the prevailing rates, which is why, you know, the rate you're paying right now on a reverse mortgage is up around 7%. They will come down, you know, as rates fall. And so, you know, whatever you have outstanding on that line of credit is growing equal to the amount of interest that's being applied, which would align with whatever the prevailing rates are. You are never required to make a payment. And so that amount that's outstanding would just be growing with interest over time. If at any point you wanted to pay it back, you could do that and reduce the amount owed. But the principal is variable, kind of moving with mortgage rates. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. Yes, sir. I got okay. you. Thank you. Okay. You answered my question.
Very good, Gus. Thanks for being on the program today. And if you want to check out or learn more about reverse mortgages, our friends at Movement Mortgage would be delighted to connect with you. Just head to movement.com/faith, and they'll explain all the details and even apply it to your situation. Back with more questions after this. Stick around. Did you know the average person walks nearly 2,000 miles a year? Now think about the millions of children around the world who risk disease and miss out on opportunities simply because they walk those 2,000 miles without a decent pair of shoes. Around the world, Buckner Shoes for Orphan Souls provides access to health, education, hope, and opportunity through the gift of shoes. Visit giveshoestoday.org and find out how you can provide shoes for a child right now.
Weekday mornings at 8 Central, Pastor Jeff Shreve offers Real Truth for Today.
I'm the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries.
The world around us is rapidly changing, but God and His truth will never change.
I may be the host of the show, but I want God's Word and His truth to be the star of the show.
Join Pastor Jeff Shreve each weekday morning at 8 Central for Real Truth for Today on American Family Radio.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building, and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We've got still some lines open today. We're ready for your questions on anything financial. Are you thinking about your lifestyle, that is staying on budget, you know, having some margin, living with beneath your means so you have margin is so key to your financial success. I mean, it really is the bedrock of financial decision-making, because that margin is the only way you can fund your long-term goals and objectives, which means you have to be on a budget. You've got to have a plan that not only gives every dollar a job, but you've got to stick to it. And I don't know if any way to do that apart from having some system that aligns with the way you want to manage money, so you have real-time visibility into what's going on in your financial life so you can make course corrections throughout the month. That's why Julie and I, my wife and I, use the FaithFi app. We have all of our envelopes there digitally. We know exactly what's in each envelope. We can make decisions throughout the month and course corrections along the way to stay on budget. If you don't have something like that, I'd love for you to check out the FaithFi app. You can do that directly in your app store, Google Play or Apple. Just search for FaithFi, or go to our website, faithfi.com, and click app. You can download it today. All right, let's head back to the phones. Two lines open at 800-525-7000. You can call right now. Let's go to Tennessee. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hello. I am calling because my question is about my retirement investment with my employer versus my investment in a high-yield savings account. I've been with my employer for 3.5 years, and during that time, according to the website, as I understand it, its growth has been at 2.47%. My high-yield savings account rate is at 5.2%.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand which investment would be most beneficial.
Yeah. Well, there's the type of account, and then there's the investments in it. With regard to your long-term savings, so your investments, retirement savings, you absolutely want to be contributing to that 401k. And I would generally recommend it, so long as you have what I call an emergency fund in place, Stephen, which is 3 to 6 months expenses for the unexpected. And that should absolutely be in that high yield savings. As long as you've got that in place, then you want to be funding all of your long-term savings, not in that high-yield savings, and I'll talk about why that is despite these high rates, but you want to do that in your 401k, and a target for that would be 10 to 15% of your take-home pay. And you're right, that's going to be beyond what they're matching. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, the benefit of getting that into the 401k is you've got the tax deferred growth. So you have a tax advantage situation there. Number one is if it's a traditional 401k, you're getting a deduction as the money goes in. That's great. Number two, it's growing tax deferred, meaning as those investments grow, and we'll talk about the lack of performance in a moment, but as they grow, you don't have taxes putting a drag on the returns. They're free to grow fully without any effect of taxes inside the 401k, which is why that's absolutely the place you want to be. Now, what about the performance, and why wouldn't we want to be in the high yield savings if you're getting five there versus two? Well, I think we've got to come back to what are you invested in? And take a look at that, because the market has done well. If you're looking at performance over the last 24 months, you should be doing much better than 2%. So that tells me, you know, that either you're in their cash account or you're in a segment of the market that just hasn't performed as well. Maybe you have it all in small cap stocks, which haven't done very well until most recently. And, you know, maybe you need to diversify into a mix of large cap and small cap and international and domestic. So it really requires that you or somebody helping you take a look at what are you currently invested in the 401k and find out what is the reason why you've not had the performance you expected and frankly should have had in the last 12 or 24 months. But that's not a reason to abandon the 401k, because the other thing is, keep in mind, if you'd use high yield savings, you're probably in a taxable account, number one. And number two, those 5% high yield savings interest rates are temporary. You know, the Federal Reserve is going to get those rates back down as soon as they feel like, you know, they've gotten inflation low enough. They're going to start dropping those rates quickly. So that's a very short term opportunity. And when we're talking about retirement money, we're talking about, you know, money that's got to grow over decades. And even once you hit retirement, if you're in good health, we still need to have a 3-decade time horizon at a minimum, because you could live well into your 90s. So even at 65, we're talking 30 years. So I think, you know, that's kind of my thought on that. But give me your any questions or reactions to that.
Okay, yeah, I do understand the response that you've given. And I think that basically answers the question that I had.
Okay. Yeah, so I think the key is, do you need somebody, either somebody who works for the plan administrator, you know, if you're at Fidelity or Schwab or whoever it is, you know, they should be able to, you know, help you understand what the investment options are. Or you could reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor on our website and get somebody to help you think through it. But it could be that there is a change in the investment mix that's needed inside that 401k. Lord bless you, Stephen. Thanks for calling today, sir. Let's go to North Carolina. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, we sold a property and owner financed the property. When do we report the taxes on it? And is it a long-term capital gain? I had it for 15 years. Lived in it some, but not. It wasn't our primary residence.
Yes, yes. Owner financing is considered an installment sale. So you are allowed to report the capital gains in proportion to the payments you receive each year, rather than reporting the entire gain in the year of the sale. So it's calculated, the gain is calculated based on the difference between the selling price and your adjusted basis in the property, which is just your purchase price, you know, plus any improvements that you made. And then it can be spread out over the period of the loan. Now, you do have to report the interest income that you receive. So that portion of the loan payments that's interest, that's subject to ordinary income taxes, not capital gains. But the portion that is just the payment for the purchase, that portion can be spread out, you know, as you realize the capital gain over time through those payments as they come in. So what I would recommend here, Peggy, is that you consult with a tax professional on this, because, you know, they can help you tailor this to your specific situation. But the good news is you don't have to report all of the capital gains this year. You're able to spread that out. But I think a CPA would be really helpful to you to kind of make all this happen. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Let me ask you one more question.
Sure. Yes, ma'am.
A short-term capital gain. What is the difference in when you report it?
I missed the first part of that question. Say that again.
if you have a long-term, what is the difference in reporting a long-term capital gain and a short-term capital gain? Yeah. Is there any break at all for having owned it all that period of time?
Well, if you've owned the property for more than a year, it's going to be a long-term capital gain. So that's the difference. If it's less than a year, it's a short-term. Long-term capital gain has a long-term capital gain rate, which for most people is either 0 or 15%. And if it's a short-term capital gain, it's going to be treated as income. So again, I think this is a time for you to reach out to that tax professional. If you need one, you can find a CKA who's a tax professional at faithfi.com. Just click find a professional. Thanks for calling, Peggy. We'll be right back with our final segment.
This weekend on The Stand Radio, we'll talk with a teacher in California who was fired for refusing to compromise her Christian faith.
They said I would have to allow transgender students in my locker room. So again, I clarify, does this mean potentially a boy in my female locker room? And they said, yes, it's the law here in California.
The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
When money takes a place that it was never intended to take, competing with first position in our lives, taken out of God's original context, our goal is to make sure that money stays in its proper context as a tool to accomplish God's purposes. We want to help you do that as we look through the lens of Scripture at the practical decisions and choices you're making every day. And so let's talk about it.
Faith and Finance with Rob West, weekdays at 9 a.m. Central or on the AFR app.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have three money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners, LTD, and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Hey, here on a Friday in our final segment, we look forward to having Jerry Boyer stop by. Jerry is our resident economist. He's a frequent contributor. He's a columnist at World News Group, and he joins us each Friday just to share his analysis on the markets. And Jerry, we were together yesterday talking to the Kingdom advisors across the country, and you shared some really insightful comments just about the economy and the market. Obviously, this week in particular has been tough, as we've seen a sell-off yesterday. Today, I'm looking at the Dow off 2%, the NASDAQ and the S&P off more than that. So just summarize right. What you shared yesterday and why even the pressure this week that we're seeing.
Well, what I shared yesterday is that the market is kind of hollow and fragile and that the economy is hollow and fragile more than you would think. If you read the press or if you just look at, you know, markets going up now, you'd have had a couple of tough weeks and obviously a tough day. But, you know, the Dow went up above 40. And my view is that that was not sustainable, that it was extremely high level valuation to the point where stocks were being priced as if they're lower risk than bonds. Yeah. When in fact, they're higher risk than bonds. They're more volatile, but even more to the point, a stock can, you know, a company can say, we're not going to do a dividend. And you know, Intel's just said that we're cutting our dividend, whereas bonds you're guaranteed that amount. So that extremely high level of valuation was fragile, and I think it had kind of built into the mix an expectation for a better economy than we actually have in reality. Now, what's interesting today is we're seeing a real break in the normal pattern, and I think it shows how fragile things really are. Because today we got the economic news of a weak job market. A little over 114,000 jobs were created, and that's not, you know, that's for a month. That's not enough to keep pace because jobs are always being created and destroyed. So that's a weak job market, and the unemployment rate went up significantly. Now, normally that would be bad news, and the central bank, people would say, well, the central bank's going to pump money into the system, and that improves the stock market. And what normally happens is there's a shift in the expectation for what the Fed's going to do. There's a futures market that tracks that. And gold goes up, but the stock market goes up too. Well, what happened today is there was definitely a shift in expectation for the next two Fed meetings that the Fed is going to pump money into the system again. In fact, we went from expecting a quarter percent cut, in September to a 0.5% cut. And then another cut, the meeting right after that. So markets believe that the Fed is going to turn the money pump on at the next meeting and the meeting after that. And gold went up accordingly and the dollar dropped. But the market didn't go up, even with the prospect of all that new money in the system, which I think is market participants saying, wait a minute, maybe the Fed can't rescue the economy. Maybe the Fed can't stimulate its way out of this. Maybe things are bad enough that even though the Fed is going to pump money into the system, we're still going to have either an official recession or something that might as well be a recession, which is a long period of zero growth. So I think that's what's going on. And that fits a lot with what we talked about yesterday with the slowing of the economy and the unsustainability of markets at those valuations that we'd seen recently.
Yeah, interesting, Jerry. Now, equity markets are not supposed to be a part of the Fed's purview, right? So if we start to see the markets sell off as we head into the fall, and that causes them to accelerate their rate cuts, I mean, that would again be beyond the scope of what they are supposed to be looking at, correct?
Yeah, I mean, they are so far beyond the scope of what they're supposed to be looking at, and really have been since the Great Recession 2009. And they even started in 2008 with quantitative easing and Operation Twist and QE2 and QE3 and QE Infinity. And I mean, they are so far out beyond what I think the legislature ever intended when it created the Fed. And even Bernanke started to signal that, well, maybe we'll pay attention to the stock market. And his argument was, well, we don't manage the stock market, but if the stock market goes down too much, then people won't feel wealthy. And if they don't feel wealthy, they won't spend. So you see the Keynesian assumptions in there?
Yeah.
The whole system is designed to get us to spend into prosperity rather than produce into prosperity. They called that the Fed put, which is kind of a technical insider term. It just indicated that the Fed will only let the markets go down so much. So they've unofficially made the stock market part of their portfolio. In addition, when they pump money into the bond market, that drives down the interest rate, and then that makes stocks more valuable by comparison. Oh, bonds aren't so valuable because the interest rate's now lower. I guess I should buy stocks instead. And so there's a substitution effect. So when they pump money into the markets in general, they pump it into the bond market, specifically the treasury bond market, but really it affects everything in markets, pumping money into the system. But just this time around, the markets are saying it won't help. It won't rescue them. They were too overvalued and the economy's too weak. Yes, the Fed will try to come to the rescue with its bad medicine. Pumping money into the system is not the way to rescue the economy. Yeah. The way to rescue the economy is to deregulate it and to get us more productive, to create a situation where, it's a little bit more painful not to work than to work. Because if we get too generous, we're supposed to have a social safety net, but not a hammock. And when it's a hammock, then a lot of people don't work who could work. What you should have is a social safety net that helps everybody who can't work and doesn't help anybody who can work to not work.
Right.
That's the ideal. You help those who need it, but those who don't, maybe we don't let them play video games in their parents' basement anymore. Maybe it's time to get a job, which means that maybe some of the welfare benefits need to be more conditional on working, for example. So we need to change those incentives for working. Frankly, we need more people, and that's not an easy quick fix because abortion wiped out a lot of our workforce. We need deregulatory forces, and we need a political outlook in which the Trump tax cuts will be kept rather than rescinded. That would get us, that would rescue the stock market. That would rescue the economy. Pumping money into it just as a sugar high, or maybe it's more like a cocaine high, given how addictive we become to it. And that's what the, that's what I think markets are signaling, that the Fed cannot drug us into feeling good about things when the economy is as weak as it is right now.
Yeah, and that weak economy is coming in, it seems, all corners of the economy. I mean, weak construction, weak housing, weak manufacturing, initial claims, the highest in a year. I mean, it's showing up across the board, isn't it?
It is, right? And manufacturing is a broad category. It's too bad I didn't have the that latest data as of yesterday in time for the webinar. But yeah, you know, a contraction. Basically, this clear. It's a manufacturing recession. We've been in a business recession for a year and a half, really. But now I think there's a point at which consumers are catching up with the reality. And I think the central bank can't rescue from that. All the central bank can do is raise prices. It can't raise production. It creates dollars, but it doesn't create goods and services. That's inflationary. Now, inflation's low for now, but if we get 150 basis points interest rate cut in the next two meetings, we start pumping money back into the system, then how long is inflation going to remain low? So basically, the scenario we've been talking about for a few years here, Rob, which is below average growth, above average inflation, kind of wobbling back and forth between the dual mandates with no clarity. They're contradictory dual mandates. Oh, you fight inflation by slowing down the economy. Oh, fight a slow economy by causing inflation. That back and forth, that's kind of what we're trapped in now. Groundhog Day for the economy. We can't break out of that until we fundamentally get back to a growth model.
All right, Jerry. Well, you've outlined a clear path to where we need to head. We'll just see if a lot of it's going to have to do with the presidential election and the House and the Senate, right?
Yeah, and the futures markets just shifted towards Harris away from Trump in the past 24 hours.
Is that right?
It's narrow. I wouldn't take that too seriously. I think there's a high probability that Josh Shapiro, the governor of my home state, Pennsylvania, will be chosen as the vice presidential nominee. Shapiro, Pennsylvania is a big state, a lot of electoral votes. It's a purple state. It really can go either way. It has two Democratic senators and a Democratic governor. So that would almost cement Pennsylvania, I think, for Harris, Harris Shapiro. I know Shapiro. I've actually been on a panel with him where I was the moderator. He was on that panel. He is a tough debater. I know J.D. Vance. I know Josh Shapiro. I don't know who wins that debate, honestly. So the idea of Vance debating Harris was very attractive to Republicans. I would say don't break out the popcorn yet, Republicans, for Harris versus Shapiro. He's a tough debater, and he's a little tricky, frankly. When we were on a panel, he broke the rules a little bit in order to gain the upper hand. So he's a little tricky, and he's sharp, and that vice presidential debate is not going to be a slam dunk for Republicans. The media coverage on Harris is so positive right now. A lot of stuff that Vance has been saying have dribbled out. So the headlines have moved from Trump to Vance. By the way, I love J.D. Vance. I love so much about his message. I love the guy. But he's not helping right now. And that's showing up in the probability market.
Fascinating. Well, it's going to be quite a fall, Jerry, but we're glad that you're going to be with us along the way to help us interpret everything that's going on. Thanks for your time today, sir.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. That's Jerry Boyer. He's our resident economist. Joins us each Friday with his market commentary and analysis. Folks, it's been a great broadcast today. So thankful to have you along with us. Jim in Texas, I apologize. We didn't get to your question on long-term care policies. Love to see if we can get you back on Monday. So stay on the line. Our team will see if we can get you scheduled to be first on that broadcast. Folks, what a privilege it is to be able to help you navigate your financial lives in light of biblical wisdom. Our goal here is to be hopeful and encouraging, but always to give you wise counsel rooted in biblical truth here on Faith and Finance. Big thanks to my team today. Certainly couldn't do this without them. Devin Patrick, Pat Montague. Also thankful for Jim Henry and the great work he does, and everybody here at FaithFi. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.